The Meaning of Marxism by Paul D'Amato. Section. Competition. The big fish eat the small fish. The bourgeoisie, wrote Marx, cannot exist without constantly revolutionizing the instruments of production, and thereby the relations of production, and with them the whole relations of society. Capitalists invest money to make more money, to make a profit. Their aim is, quote, the unceasing movement of profit-making, as Marx put it. To make money, capitalists must sell their products on the market. There must be a demand for them. Yet individual capitalists don't control the market. Rather, the market controls them. There is no central control, no planning in the economy as a whole, only the anarchy of the market, where individual producers are forced to compete with one another for market share, and only know once they've brought their products to market whether they will sell or not. This competition is what drives capitalists to continually revolutionize the means of production, to reduce production costs in order to cheapen their product and outsell their competitors. On pain of being driven into extinction by their competitors, capitalists must be able not only to sell most of what they produce, they must be able to sell it at a profit. In turn, they must be able to reinvest a part of this profit to expand production and beat out their competitors. As Marx wrote, accumulate, accumulate. That is Moses and the prophets. Continued quote. Therefore, save, save, i.e., reconvert the greatest possible portion of surplus value or surplus product into capital. Accumulation for accumulation's sake, production for production's sake. By this formula, classical economy expressed the historical mission of the bourgeoisie. End quote. Capitalists do this in two ways. First, they fight to lower wages as much as possible, to the barest minimum if they can get away with it. The smaller the portion of investment that goes to wages, the bigger the portion of a day's labor that goes unpaid, and therefore counts as surplus value. Another way to do this is to make workers work longer hours for the same pay. In the early days of capitalism, low wages and impossibly long hours, not to mention child labor, were the norm. But as capitalism developed, workers began organizing and winning a shorter workday, and many capitalists came to realize that if workers were going to successfully reproduce and raise the next generation of workers, they couldn't be worked to death through 12, 14, or 16-hour workdays. Capitalists increasingly turned to finding ways to increase productivity, the output per worker per hour. They did this first by making workers work harder to produce more in less time. Taylorism, or the misnamed scientific management, named after Frederick Winslow Taylor, an early 20th century engineer devoted to improving industrial efficiency, was all about managers observing workers and timing their movements in order to eliminate all, quote, dead time and superfluous motion. The aim was to turn the worker into a streamlined automaton. Capitalists think that by paying wages, they earn the right not only to set a worker to work, but to determine the way in which the work is performed. A worker's own ingenuity in finding the most efficient way to perform a task, which he or she naturally uses to lighten the burden of labor, is taken by capitalist managers and used to squeeze out every last drop of work. One author describes the militarized methods of scientific management used on workers at United Parcel Service. Quote, As every UPS employee knows, every motion, every step, every turn has been studied, measured, and timed. Drivers must work exactly according to UPS methods. Enter the truck with the right foot, not the left. Carry the package with the left arm, not the right. Carry the truck keys on the little finger of the right hand and on no other finger. End quote. One worker tells of how his wife calls him a UPS robot. Bosses also squeeze out more work by investing in more and more productive machinery, thereby cutting down the cost per unit of production and undercutting the competition by underselling it. Going back to the labor theory of value, if machinery cuts down the time it takes to produce something, the product's value will go down. It is this that permits the capitalist to sell at or below the value of the competition. With each new invention, some capitalists will go bankrupt, and others will adopt the new technology, wiping out the advantage of the capitalist who introduced it first. Then the whole process starts again. Over the history of capitalism, productivity has soared astronomically compared to the sluggish pace of technological change in previous societies. From the beginning of the 19th century to the end of the 20th, writes economic historian Michel Baude, worldwide per capita production was multiplied by a factor of 6. Since world population during this time span rose from 1 billion to 6 billion, we may estimate that total world production was multiplied by a factor of 36. To give some examples, between 1973 and 1990, according to one study, world machine productivity increased by more than 50%. Over the past 3 decades, changes in steel production methods have reduced by as much as 90% the time it takes to produce a ton of steel. Another result of capitalist competition is that individual capitals get bigger and bigger, not only by growing in size as profits are reinvested in bigger and more productive operations, but also because the big fish swallow the little fish. This happens by bigger firms buying out smaller ones, and by profitable enterprises buying out and scooping up the ones that have failed. One capitalist always kills many, as Marx wrote in Capital, calling this process the concentration, bigger units, and centralization, fewer units, of capital. This process doesn't mean that small businesses disappear, but it does mean that they become less and less economically significant. According to economist Michael Zweig, in the United States in 1995, 1.5% of businesses employed 34% of the manufacturing workforce. 96% of manufacturing corporations took in only 12% of revenue, whereas the 1,134 largest corporations, less than 0.5% of all manufacturing corporations, took in 71% of all manufacturing corporations' revenue and 83% of the profit. What, therefore, began as more or less, quote, free competition, over time, has led toward the growth of trusts, cartels, and monopolies, where a small number of huge corporations control an entire market. This process took off dramatically among the leading capitalist nations, the United States, Britain, Germany, France, and Japan, in the late 1800s. For example, a wave of mass mergers during the 1890s produced significant industrial concentration. For the U.S. economy as a whole, there were over 3,000 mergers during 1898 to 1902. U.S. Steel Corporation was formed through a series of mergers involving 165 separate companies. It became the world's first billion-dollar company and controlled over 60% of the U.S. steel market. But as these capitalist concerns grew, they became so large that they were driven beyond national boundaries, more and more into the creation of an integrated world market. Capitalism is the first economic system that is truly a world system that draws all corners of the planet into its, quote, cash nexus. Capitalism creates tremendous wealth unheard of in previous times. But it does so in such a way as to deny the wealth it creates to the majority it exploits. In theory, the growth of machine-based manufacturing should be a means to lessen the burden of work, shorten the workday, and provide everyone with jobs. Instead, quote, machinery in itself shortens the hours of labor, but when employed by capital, it lengthens them. In itself, it lightens labor, but when employed by capital, it heightens its intensity. In itself is a victory of man over the forces of nature, but in the hands of capital, it makes man the slave of those forces. In itself, it increases the wealth of the producers, but in the hands of capital, it makes them into paupers. End quote. Urban planner and historian Lewis Mumford, though no Marxist, could see how the vast gulf between the promise of technological progress and its capitalist application was a glaring contradiction at the heart of the system. Quote, those machines whose output was so great that all men might be clothed, those new methods of agriculture and new agricultural implements which promised crops so big that all men might be fed, the very instruments that were to give the whole community the basis of a good life turned out, for the vast majority of people who possessed neither capital nor land, to be nothing short of instruments of torture. End quote. From its inception, capitalism has depended on there being a pool of unemployed and semi-unemployed workers that can be drawn on when growth is on the upswing, and tossed into the streets when growth slows down. This unemployed reserve army varies from country to country, but nowhere is it below 6 or 7% of the population, and in most places it grows far larger. The growth of capitalism creates jobs, a fact frequently touted by presidents and pundits. However, over the long haul, capitalism is also a job killer, as a result of the shrinking of the role of labor in the production process. Unemployment is an inbuilt feature of capitalism, one which capitalists depend on to discipline workers who have jobs. Instead of lowering everyone's hours and providing jobs for all, capitalism maximizes the hours and intensity of work, using the threat of unemployment, or the threat that other workers can always be hired for less, as a means of keeping the working class in check. In other words, the very process that improves productivity, and therefore the potential for a greater standard of living and less work for all, becomes under capitalism a means to increase exploitation at the workers' expense.